Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Woo, 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 woo. Good Monday morning, everybody. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a great Mother's Day yesterday afternoon. Hope you had a great Last Dance Sunday evening. Episodes 7 and 8 dropped last night. How are you, fellas?
Fantastic. Wonderful. Absolutely fantastic. Hey. Mother's Day was amazing. I'm very blessed that I get a chance to spend a significant amount of time with my mom because she lives with us here in Arizona. So I made her this big Mother's Day feast with like a steak the size of your forehead, Travis. I made some fresh greens. I did the cornbread. Well, I actually didn't do the cornbread. I'm not going to lie. I did do the cornbread. But I did like prosciutto wrapped scallops. Ooh. I did shrimp on the barbie. Like I just laid it all out. And they were coma.
Afterwards. Yeah. Key, did you put on the Chef Boyardee chef's jacket? Did you whip something up yesterday?
No. We did not. We went. We went out your way.
Yeah, oh, nice.
Hung out in down south and enjoyed the weather and just chilled. That's really what you know. We didn't really have a huge barbecue. We didn't have ribeyes and scallops and shrimpers and all those sort of things. We kind of just chilled and played games, some checkers and some Connect Fours and some other little stuff my kids had. And we just
looked like you were about to fall asleep on that lawn wherever you were.
No, I was asleep. No, I did. I literally fell asleep and I heard myself snoring.
That's how you know you're in a good spot. When you can, you feel yourself fading away and you kind of wake yourself up with a little soft snoring. That's how you know you're in a pretty comfortable spot.
Typically, I can't fall asleep outdoors because, you know, critters.
Because it's dangerous.
Yeah, exactly. But when my kids and Jen was right there, it's like, oh, okay, now I can get mine in. She can play with them and I'm just going to go ahead and close these eyes real quick.
Well, nice.
Thing around me. I mean, if anything comes near me, they got that, you know?
Yeah. Well, all right, let's explore this a little bit. What exactly are you afraid of coming and getting you?
Like, I can't, like, I can't lay in my backyard. Like, if I lay in my backyard and fall asleep, I'm afraid that a coyote or something might hop the gate. a bobcat, anything. So it's difficult for me to lay in my backyard and to get a snooze.
You know, you're pretty tough out for a coyote, Key. You're a lot bigger than a coyote.
Yeah, but I don't even want to take the chance.
You never know. One of them might be Gary Payton.
I might get a full grown coyote though. that hadn't eaten in a week.
That's a wolf. I think you're okay with coyotes.
Or whatever. I just don't want anything fooling with me. But when I have eyes on me, you know, when people are around, I can get them Z's in easy.
Nice. It was.
What did you do?
We were at the house. We hung out here. I made dinner again. I was busy in the kitchen this weekend. I did a good little number on Saturday night. I followed Key's tinfoil fish boat recipe to wrap it up in the oven with the veggies and the oil, and it was great. We had a really good time. Went for a nice little hike yesterday. I'm on goal to get to 100 miles by the end of May, so it's good. It's good.
Good.
By the way, you heard me right. 100 miles by the end of May in my hiking, and I am on schedule. So that's nothing short of a miracle. Wow. Yes, Rob.
Sorry, I hit the wrong button. I was trying to give you a little ding for 100 miles. Good job.
Damn kids playing at the doorbell.
And, of course, last night, episode 7 and 8, Last Dance. These were the Michael leaves basketball, goes and plays baseball, returns to the NBA episodes. What was the jump off for you guys? What was the big takeaway as far as you were concerned on Last Dance last night?
For me, it was, you know, I would probably say watching baseball. Hadn't been a high school baseball player, little league baseball player myself, and watching a guy with such a long layoff be able to go to AA and do some of the things, not rookie ball, you know, not single A, mm-hmm. not some league that they putting together at the local park, but the actual AA baseball when – you get put in the double A, that's usually the next couple steps to the majors. And
yeah, so you jump straight to the big leagues a lot from double A.
And having a guy go there, and think about it. His basketball had been his career, okay? His body, the changing, having to change his body from hoops to baseball, just all the different mind games that you have to play in different sports to be able to make the transition that he made. Now, was he Barry Bonds? No. No. But think about how long he had. That's like me saying to myself, and I was sitting here as I was talking to Vance last night as we were watching. I said, Vance, think about it. If Daddy was a decent hooper in high school, decent. But that's like me playing football for 10 years, 9, 10 years, and then deciding, you know what? I'm going to go play in the CBA and in try to get some in. And then I go out there and I'm giving them 12, 3, and 2. And people sitting there saying, oh, man, he ain't a basketball player. No crap, I'm not. But I'm headed in that direction based on getting back in it. So learning all of that, guy hit 51, 202. 202 ain't chopped liver when you don't know how to do it. You know, 51 ribbies is not when I saw 51 ribbies prior to the episode, I read it. I said, man, that's a misprint. And then I heard it. I'm like, yeah, I mean, yeah, maybe they were throwing him fastballs. Maybe they were not throwing him breaking balls, and they wasn't giving him some junk. But to continue to do it and fight through it and battle it and learn how to eventually start to do it, it would have been interesting to see if that strike wasn't coming down the pipeline, what that next spring training, summer, all of those sort of things would have amounted to. It would have been very interesting to see.
The baseball was interesting, but I found myself mostly connected to Michael when he was talking about the drive and the pushing for excellence and trying to win at all costs. That's when I really felt connected, because I'm the dude that still dives on the ground for a loose ball on concrete because I hate to lose. I can fathom being beaten by a team that just was better than mine, but I hate losing. And losing is a mentality as much as anything else. It's not being sharp. It's not doing all the things you can to be successful. And when Mike started talking about it with such passion, I was like, hell yeah, that's what it takes. And not just in sports, but just period. There's just a level that of grind and hustle that all grinders and hustlers respect. And when you recognize it with someone else, you identify with that passion. And I get it. You know, it's easy to look back and be able to characterize things as, you know, mythological or lionize someone. And I'm sure there's some of that happening as well. But at the end of the day, when he starts to cry and has to take a break, talk about how much he wants to win and what this and why he pushes the way he pushes, I just thought that was the most compelling part of the entire series so far.
Yeah, the burden that he carried with him, like you said, I mean, this is something that comes from internal, the desire to win, the need to win. Obviously, we all know that Michael Jordan was competitive like few of the people we've ever seen, but I didn't realize it took the toll on him that it did. When you listen to him talk about the relationships that he had with his teammates, or more to the point, maybe did not have with his teammates, and you listen to all the guys that were talking in the doc, that not everybody has really warm, fuzzy feelings. They love the winning. They love the results. But the process to get there, you could tell that was a burden that Michael carried, because he knew he had to do that to his teammates. He knew that he had to push them to places that they would not go on their own, and that was his responsibility to get them to do it.
Yeah, and when you look at that, though, you know, one of the reasons, I guess, for me, I mean, it was cool to see, but I closely remind myself that I live that style of attitude in myself as a player, where I push myself to the limits with my teammates, where I didn't ask them to do anything that I wasn't going to do. I've lived that. So seeing that, it was just like, okay, I expect that from him and Kobe. You know, I expect that from those type of guys. I expect that from Jerry Rice. I expect for them Derrick Brooks. I expect for them. So it wasn't like, you know, seeing that, it was just like, okay, I get it. I understand it, because for all costs and winning is what it is. And the fact that he shed tears, he shared the tears to me, shedded those tears to me because of the grief that he got and he had received for being in their ass so much and trying to win, and people didn't understand, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. Because I wouldn't be on – I'm not on the court to wear the logo. The logo was cool, but those gold big basketball things, those long trophies that I can hold, that's cooler. But I can't do it if I got to do it all by myself. And if you slacking and you doing the things you doing, then it ain't going to do nothing but set me back. Yeah, he's good, he's great, but they didn't win. Yeah, he's good, he's great, but – and you never want to be in that position. You never want to be in that position. I remember, when they asked me years ago when I was playing, what drove me? And I said, man, at the end of the day, I need them to always mention, you know, he did win a Super Bowl. And, he was a major contributor. Not that he was on a Super Bowl winning team. Not that, oh, he was a great player. Oh, he got some good numbers. But, you know, he never won. And I don't want that. That's not the way we trying to end this thing. And at the end of the day, you get in your coach's ass. You get in some players' butts that are not doing the right things. And, yeah, depending on who's covering you, they may call you selfish. They may call you a lot of different things because they really don't know deep inside what is driving you, and especially if you ain't sharing it because it ain't none of their damn business.
They called somebody a quitter on that Bulls team, too. We got to see that last night, and that is still knocking around in people's head. We'll get into that, plus Stephen A. Smith scheduled to join us here in the 6 o'clock hour. All of that coming up on the morning show on 710 ESPN. So we knew that this was going to come up, guys. We knew that the playoff game where Phil Jackson designed the play for Tony Kukoc and Scottie Pippen said, no, I'm not doing that, and wouldn't go out on the court. Tony Kukoc hits the shot, and I thought that was fascinating last night to see the reaction from all the guys on that team as they were – by the time they'd gotten off the floor and were going down that staircase into the locker rooms, you could tell they knew that something really bad had happened. They won the game, but they knew that they were in a position where they were going to have to deal with all of the fallout from there. You heard Steve Kerr, Bill Wennington, Bill Cartwright, all of these guys talking about this stuff like – yeah, that was a huge miss by Scottie Pippen. And Scottie was still sitting there saying, you know what? If I could do it all over again, I'd do it the same way.
Yeah, I don't know about that one. I mean, but look, he's true to form. He believes what he believes. I just, you know, you're trying to send a message. I get it.
Everything you've told us.
You just don't do that.
Suggests that you would have leaned more towards Pippen than not. From
I'm not leaning toward sitting on the end of no damn bench talking about.
I didn't say all the way, but in terms we're not calling this play.
If you ain't calling the play, cool. I'm gonna go in and let it happen, but I'm not fit to sit out.
If you ain't gonna call the play all the way,
cool.
But you have told us repeatedly that they've called some stuff up that wasn't to your liking, and you have straight up said, we ain't doing that.
Yes, but at the end of the day, Pippen has the right to say we ain't doing it. It's many players for many times that said, no, we changing the play. I done seen it where in basketball, football, and everything else. But the moment that they don't change the play, you don't sit out. That's not why the players were mad at him. They weren't mad at him because he wanted the ball and he tried to convince them. They were mad at him and disappointed because he didn't go in.
Right.
You just go in. At the end of the day, I've been in a position, Indianapolis Colts game, down, going in, timeout called, go to the sideline. They're going to draw it up. Oh, so y'all not going, okay, cool, no problem. I'll clear it out. And at the end of the day, when it didn't complete it, guess what I told them? You use me as a damn decoy. You should sleep good tonight. And that's it. They kept it moving.
Well,
but I'm not going to support not going into the game. That's stupid.
I thought it was telling the Phil Jackson's reaction to it. And Steve Kerr was the one telling the story that when Jackson found out that Pippen was not going in the game, he said, what? And then he went over to him and said, hey, are you in or are you out? And Scottie said, I'm out. And then Jackson said, you know, blank him. and just sent the play out there, and they ran it anyway. Phil Jackson has this aura, this reputation, this image of being a pretty thoughtful guy in high emotional situations, in high conflict situations, and being able to navigate that he just went with a straight bleep that guy and let's go out there and do it. I think told you how shocking it was that Scottie Pippen made that call. And even 30 years later, that he's still sitting there saying, I would have done it the same way, because you heard him apologize to his teammates after the fact. He said, I thought I was bigger than the game. I wasn't. All his teammates said, you quit on us. And he obviously, that hit him a certain way. But man, 30 years later, you're still saying you do it the same. You still wouldn't say, you know what? Yeah, I missed it. I blew it. I should have been out there. I don't know how you don't alter your course at some point.
You, if you Scottie Pippen, what you do is you go in the game, you do what they ask you to do, and then you check their ass after the game in their little coach's office. You mm-hmm. go in there and you give him the riot act to the point.
Even if the ball goes through the hoop key?
I wouldn't give a damn, because that's the way you feel. You go in there and you chew his ears off to the point that they're hanging down to his elbows. I'm telling you, that's how you deal with it. You don't deal with it by sitting on the bench, pouting at the end of the game. You gave up on your team. You quit on them. You absolutely quit on them 155%. You go in the game. And then at that point, you walk into the locker room and you go into the coach's office and you blast them to the point that they don't even want to come out the locker room. They're going to sleep at the stadium. That's how that's how bad. That's and at that point, you can give it to them. Even if it went in, you give it to them. You give it to them. Because if you feel like you were slighted in that position, because that's the way he was feeling, he was the guy, he was an MVP candidate, and you decided to do the smart thing, which was, give it to Kukoc, who had been hitting shots like that the entire year, but also you're using him as the decoy to win the game because everybody expects for you to take that shot. But now he's not taking the shot. Somebody else is taking it. And just so for Phil Jackson and for the Chicago Bulls, it worked out. Now, had it gone in and out of the rim, it still doesn't alleviate the fact that Pip decided to sit down. In fact, it would have probably been worse if he would have missed the shot.
Well, the first thing, of course, is that I look at it and go, that was an absolute slight of Scottie Pippen. Under no circumstances do you have your MVP check the ball in with 1 point, whatever seconds that were left, less than 2 seconds left.
Well, if you coaching,
so,
if you coaching,
so essentially
if you coaching
you're saying,
LZ though,
I'm taking my MVP
LZ,
and I'm
coaching,
making him a decoy with less than 2 seconds left.
If you coaching and you feel like a philosophy is there where you're making him the decoy and because everybody's going to collapse to him, and you got a free shot with Tony Kukoc or whoever that may be. It could have been B.J. Armstrong. It could have been Paxton. It could have been whoever was on the team, for all that matter. If that's what you believe at that moment in that time, based on how you draw it up and what you've seen, and it goes right, then guess what? You look like the coach that made the right decision. You can't factor in all the time that the best – they do it all the time, the best player – gets it at the last minute. We looked at the Seattle Seahawks go away from Marshawn Lynch at the end of the game. It didn't work out for them. They drew it up, and it didn't work out for them. They should have probably gave the ball to Marshawn Lynch because he had been pounding, just like Kukoc had been pounding at the end of games, where they decided not to. They decided to try to make Russell Wilson the hero, and they got bit. So it just depends on how it works out.
Well, I don't think those are necessarily apples to apples.
Only why not?
One, as I said, there's less than 2 seconds left.
Well, it just
this isn't a Scotty as a decoy. This is Scotty's not getting the ball. There's not enough time to pass the ball.
Got to come back.
Get the ball and come right. Exactly. That's not happening. So it's Scotty, you're not taking the final shot. Is what that was. All that's right. Totally different than you're on the court as a decoy. This is. we're not including you in this shot process.
Guys, let's do this. Let's come back. There's a lot more to talk to about this because Michael, in the moment, even though Michael wasn't on that team, Michael, in the moment, called Phil Jackson and basically predicted what was going to happen with Scotty from that point forward. We'll come back. We'll do that. Plus, Stephen A. Smith is scheduled to join us next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with Geico. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
All right, as promised, we are joined right now on the Sprint People's Hotline by Stephen A. Smith. Stephen A., good morning. Thanks for coming on. How are you?
What's going on, fellas? How y'all doing? Hope y'all and your loved ones are all safe and sound.
Awesome. Same to you, sir. Same to you. We're talking about The Last Dance, what we took away from the last two episodes last night. What was the one thing you took away from watching last night's episodes?
Well, for me, I mean, a lot of people point to Jordan's emotion at the end. I point to the words that he said prior to that, and that is, A, I never asked any of my teammates to do anything that I didn't do or wasn't willing or was willing to do myself or wasn't willing to do myself, A. And B, and more importantly, because I think that it has a lot to do with leadership across the spectrum, whether it's in sports, corporate America, in another capacity, no matter what. When you are a leader, and you know you put in that work, but more importantly, you know you went through wars to get to where you are. Somebody who comes along later and is reaping the benefits from it, you want to make sure that they put in the same sacrifice or they're willing to put in the same work and endure the same sacrifices necessary to continue to excel and ascend. I don't care who you are. I don't care what line of work that you're in or what have you. If you are both a leader and a winner and you got through it, you got to that point the very, very hard way. You're not trying to watch somebody cruise their way to that level themselves. You're not going for it. You're going to hold them accountable. You're going to push. You're going to prod. You're not going to be pleasant all the time. It's whatever it takes, because you had to have that mentality, whatever it takes, in order to get to where you are.
Stephen A., when you looked at the last night, and I know you know the story backhanded all over the place, mm-hmm. Scottie Pippen made a decision to sit on the bench at the end of the day, not go in to inbound the ball. How does it?
Yep.
How does that make Scottie look overall when you look at it for his entirety of his career?
Well, I'll give you a tease about First Take. This morning, coming on at the top of the hour, I don't think anybody looks worse in the documentary than Scottie Pippen. Think about it. Episode one or two, if I remember correctly. They started off saying Scottie Pippen postponed his surgery, didn't take care of it, and then you see sound from him saying that he didn't want to F up his summer. You know, he had been screwed over by the Bulls contract-wise, grossly underpaid, and as a result, he refused to mess up his summer. He wanted to enjoy his summer, which ultimately ended up forcing him not to be ready for that upcoming season, the last season, and he ended up missing the first 35 games. So you're on the record admitting that you delayed your surgery on purpose to make sure you enjoyed your summer, because your attitude was screw the Bulls because they had been screwing you, even though you were making $2.8 million and Michael Jordan had averaged just $4 million a year in salary for the first 11 years of his career. He was underpaid too. Wasn't that particular season he was underpaid because he had become a free agent, but he was underpaid for the first 11 years of his career. Then you see last night, Scottie Pippen refuses to come into the game, and people are looking at the fact that he refused to check into the game because Phil Jackson called the last play for Tony Kukoc. What they're missing is what was highlighted prior to that. What was highlighted prior to that was that when Jordan departed from the Bulls and retired the first time around and went and played baseball, and that next season Scottie Pippen was the leader, they talked about and he talked about how they led through committee. yes, he was the star and he was an all-star and was balling and was an MVP candidate as far as I'm concerned. But the bottom line was they still ran the triangle offense damn near to perfection because unlike Jordan, who was the man, Scottie Pippen had gotten everybody involved. So if you're getting everybody involved throughout the season, and there were multiple occasions where Tony Kukoc had hit game-winning shots, why would you suddenly have an aversion to Phil Jackson calling that play when, by and large, that's the kind of stuff that got y'all there to begin with? Y'all were playing team basketball, and it wasn't just you taking those final shots. That is where he looks bad. It would be one thing if he was the guy whose number was being called on the last play all season long, but that was not the case. On several occasions, it was Tony Kukoc. This just happened to be a playoff game. So that makes Scottie Pippen look very bad as far as I'm concerned. And I think he looks worse than anybody in this documentary. I love Scottie, but I think that he looks worse than anybody considering the two bad moments he's had in this docuseries.
How, if he had gone in and inbounded the ball, mm-hmm. opposed to sitting on the bench and being, I guess you could, I would call it quitting on his team, had he not done right. that, is it different? Being mad at them post-game in the locker room and tirade, is it different?
Well, the point is that he probably wouldn't have had a tirade in the locker room thereafter because the game-winning shot was hit by Tony Kukoc. So the next day in practice or when he had a conversation with Phil in his office or something like that after the game, that would have been different. I don't think it would have been a tirade because they would have won the game as opposed to have lost it. But clearly it would be significantly different. And we view Scottie Pippen significantly different if it wasn't for that moment. Let's take this into account, Key. We're talking about one of the top three defenders in the history of basketball. In Scottie Pippen, as far as I'm concerned, an all-time 50 great player, a six-time champion. You know, this dude is exceptional and special. The three greatest moments associated with Scottie Pippen is the migraine in a game seven where he couldn't really go, had to be benched, and they lost in game seven to the Pistons in the conference finals. You have the contract situation that so railed him that he delayed his surgery that last season, and obviously said, you know what, I'm going to delay my surgery, not have it over the summer, miss the first 35 games. And during that season, earlier on, before he came back, remember, he said he would never play in a Bulls uniform again. And then before that is the play where he refused to check in the game. Those are three incredibly conspicuous moments attached to the career of Scottie Pippen that comes along with any narrative about him despite his greatness. I think that's unfortunate.
Stephen A. Smith joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. Stephen A., go back and tell me your thoughts when Michael Jordan originally decided to retire. What did that feel like to you at the time? And did you think, you know what, he's gone for good, or he may go and play baseball for a minute, but he's going to ultimately come back to the NBA?
I thought he would come back. I remember, you know, it was in 1993. I just graduated from college a year earlier, and I thought he would come back. I thought that, you know, the media scrutiny, particularly with – you know, his purported gambling issues combined with his father being murdered. I think that the combination of all of that was really, really what got to him. And he was like, I need a break. I can't take much more of this. But he was entirely too young at that particular time. He was in the prime of his career. And I thought that he just needed a break. I was surprised when he came back to play for the Washington Wizards. I knew that he had ownership aspirations, and that's why he did it. But I was still surprised to see him wearing another uniform other than the Chicago Bulls. I was not surprised at all that he came out of retirement the first time to come and go for that second three-peat with the Bulls. I had anticipated that that would be the case, especially if there were guys on the come-up and they were talking enough trash, you know, this is the Jordan era is over. It's our time. Let's go. I knew that Jordan was the kind of guy that would say, okay, let me get back into action.
Stephen A., one of the more hilarious parts of the last night was listening to Jordan talk about Gary Payton. Now, he mm-hmm. says he didn't have any problems with Gary Payton, but when you look at the first three games in the series versus the next three games in the series with Gary Payton was on them, stats say a different thing. Where does the truth lie?
Well, the truth lies somewhere in the middle. What I mean by that is that Jordan is going to have his way with anybody. And what Jordan was laughing about last night is the notion that any human being could stop him one-on-one. When Jordan was in college, Jordan was interviewed, and he was asked who could stop him. He said one person, Dean Smith, his coach. You know, there's nobody else that could stop him. So he always had that mentality, and he was true to form in that regard. You know, when you look at Gary Payton, you have to think about somebody, let's say, like a Joe Dumars. Joe Dumars gave Jordan a tougher time than most, but it wasn't like he could stop Jordan. When we talk about LeBron, Kawhi Leonard gave him a tougher time than most, but LeBron still averaged 28 in the finals. Jordan averaged 27 on 42% shooting against Gary Payton and the Seattle Supersonics in that final series. When you look at what transpired there, Gary Payton, the glove, an elite defender, the heart of a lion. Nobody had a bigger heart than Gary Payton. Wasn't scared of anybody, talked a lot of trash, tried to get in your mug, tried to snatch your heart right out of your chest, and was going to show MJ he wasn't scared of him. He would make him work, and he would challenge him. But what Jordan was laughing about is this notion that somehow, some way, somebody could stop him. He never believed that, doesn't believe that to this day. Jordan was the kind of person that had actually contemplated, if I was 50 years old, what could I step on the court and do? I'm talking about when he was 50, he contemplated that. So imagine how much confidence he had when he was 40, okay, and when he was 35. Those are the kind of things you got to think about.
You see, I keep trying to tell y'all, see my mentality? I keep telling y'all to get in shape right now and go and catch 70 rocks all day long with no problem.
We had to drag you across the finish line for the marquee race, man. What are you talking about?
Yeah, right. I'm just telling you the mentality, and Stephen A. is right. When you got a certain mentality and you feel a certain type of way and you know that this dude is not on the same level as me, come on now. You disrespecting me.
That's basically right. Absolutely. Every athlete that I've interviewed has had the same mentality in regard to that. They don't believe anybody could stop them.
Stephen A., do you think that he needed that break, that break where he went to go play baseball in order to go get the next three? Did he just need to get away from it for a period of time so he would find a new challenge, rediscover the love for it? Did that have to happen for him to get the next three?
I think so, guys, because you're melting down mentally, man. I mean, listen. You know, when you cover sports for as long as I have, what you do is you it's not about what you know. It's about what people trust you enough to tell you. And so, you know, when you talk to these guys, man, and you listen to some of their stories, I'm telling you right now, I've covered athletes that I remember one athlete in particular. I thought he was going to retire, and I'll never name who he was, but he's a superstar and he was a Hall of Famer. And no, it was not Allen Iverson. Let me tell you something, man. This one particular athlete literally cried like a baby because he had to go home. He wanted to be on the road. He did not want to go home to his wife. He cried because he had to go home and literally missed a couple of games thereafter because the coach gave him a break because he knew he needed to get away just to get away from his marriage situation. That literally happened. When you see and you imagine what these guys go through, we're all human beings. We go through a lot of things. Some people are stronger than others, but some people are subjected to more scrutiny, more stress than others at times. And then you look at the video, the footage of Michael Jordan, wherever he goes, look at all of those people who surrounded him. Always got somebody touching you. Always got somebody with their arms wrapped around you just to get you through a crowd. And the only place he had peace was in a hotel room. Couldn't even go out of the hotel room because everything was a mob scene. Everywhere you go to play golf, people want to talk to you. You want to eat, people want to talk to you. Everybody want to reach out and touch you. They want pictures, they want autographs, they want everything. It can be overwhelming and tiring, and people don't realize that.
But how does that change when you go from basketball to baseball and the circus is going to follow you? Because now you've given them something else to chew on that's intriguing to the population.
The difference is that in basketball, you're the greatest ever. So that comes with loads of obligations and expectations. In baseball, you want to come up. You're a novice going up against dudes in the minor league who's better than you. And you have something to prove. So all of a sudden, it's just a different mentality. You know this better than me, Key, because you played football. The bottom line is that when you the man coming out of USC and you the number one overall pick okay, what if you decided to go and play basketball and you start off as the 12th man? Yeah, you're going to still have attention. You're going to still have eyeballs. People are going to be inquisitive and curious, and they're going to watch you, but it's devoid of the expectations. When you have the expectations placed on your shoulders, there's a level of focus that you have to have in order to be able to rise to the challenge. He didn't have that at that particular moment in time. And then even when he came back, he sat up there and used things as motivation. They talked about the thing when, you know, that kid Smith out of for the Washington Wizards dropped 37 on him in a home game. And then Michael Jordan had 36 the next game in the first half. I covered the game where he went against Calvert Chaney and dropped over 50, and he was trying to win the game, and they were operating from a deficit, and Calvert Chaney leaned on him and said, man, don't you get tired? Michael Jordan told him to look at the score. The score was tied. Michael Jordan said, I never get tired. And then after that, Michael Jordan scored a few buckets on him, including a fall away where he was laying down damn near like he was in a bed, falling away to shoot a baseline jump shot on the right side and drilled it to seal the game. And before, while running to the bench, he stopped and kneeled in front of Calvert Chaney and said, damn, I'm tired.
Man, Stephen A. Smith.
At least you recognize I could have gone to the NBA. I wasn't going to be the 12th man. I'd at least got it tonight.
Yeah, right.
Hit the ninth rotation.
Right.
I just used it metaphorically. I damn sure ain't saying you could play basketball.
Exactly right. Exactly. Stephen A. Smith, First Take coming up in about 18 minutes from right now. Stephen A., thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, you got it. We'll come back. We'll react to some things that Stephen A. said right there. Plus, we're going to get into the good, the bad, and the what from episodes 7 and 8 of The Last Dance. All right, so Stephen A. had a lot of great points right there, a lot of things to get into. But let's start with this. And Stephen A.'s point was that he thinks through the first 8 episodes of this, the guy that's coming out of this looking the worst is Scottie Pippen. And let's start with this idea right here. When we saw the piece last night about Scottie sitting out in that playoff game against the Knicks – and then Phil was telling the story about Michael calling him immediately thereafter. You may remember, Michael was not a member of the team at this point. And Michael called Phil and said, he's not going to be able to live this down, is he? He's never going to be able to live this down. And here we are, 2020, nearly 30 years later, and we're still talking about Scottie's decision to take a seat on the bench at the end of a playoff game. Michael was right, and look, everybody knows Scottie's a great player. Everybody knows that Scottie's a Hall of Famer, and he's a big part of the reason that they won those 6 titles. But the sit-down, the migraine, all of these things still are in that first paragraph of the Scottie Pippen resume.
Yeah, and really, the sit-down, it just took the cake. The sit-down took the cake. The migraine, okay, no one could question your health. If you're not feeling good and you – clearly wasn't, because nothing was going your way. The shots, none of the things was happening. Nothing was, you couldn't play defense. It was bad. I got that. I give you that one. The money, I give you the money because you feel a certain way. And if player ain't getting paid, it's like, okay, man, I'm not going to do what I need to do to help you if you ain't doing what you're supposed to do for me. The sit down, though, if he doesn't sit down, those other two, people kind of push that aside. But once you sat down, that's a bad deal right there. To sit down was a bad deal by Scottie. Just a bad deal.
It was definitely a bad deal. I understand why he arrived there, but it doesn't mean that it was justified. I just understand why he got there. Another thing I thought was interesting was that, you know, they're in control of how this narrative is spun. And they have not spared Scottie, as far as I'm concerned. They spared other aspects. They've massaged other aspects. When it came to Scottie, they're truth-telling. And I wonder if that's part of the reason why Scottie Pippen has decided not to do any press regarding The Last Dance, because he witnessed what happened during a 10-part docuseries and sees there'll be a lot of questions that he may not want to have to answer on the other side of it. But as far as I'm concerned, they're not sparing him at all.
What did they massage, LZ? Because it seems like to me that they're giving you everything that they're supposed to give you. What are we missing?
Well, listen, there's a lot, all right? But, you know, I don't want to get into every bit of minutiae in terms of that time period and what's missing. I'll just say, excuse me, that you can present certain things as important, and you can present certain things as minor issues. But every single thing that dealt with Scottie Pippen has been presented in its fullness as a major issue.
I see that everything I've heard, both growing up watching the Bulls, being in the NFL at the time, following Michael Jordan post-career, I've seen everything. There's nothing that I haven't seen or they haven't touched upon that I already knew. Maybe I didn't know in depth about some of those things, but I've, from baseball to his gambling to his father being murdered, they've touched on all those things.
Well, go back to a couple of – stick with the Scottie piece for a second. Are we surprised that Scottie is being portrayed the way that he is, or is this just Scottie's legacy? That this is, you know, great player, but there's a whole bunch of buts after that. Or did you think that maybe because it's a Michael Jordan production, because it's a Michael Jordan's last dance, the Bulls' last dance, the great story of the Chicago Bulls through the 90s, that Scottie would have been painted in a more favorable light? Or is this just, hey, this is what it was. We didn't put him in this spot. He created this spot.
I would say it's more about we didn't put him in this spot. He created it. You're talking about a season in which he had migraines. You're talking about a season at a time when he didn't get paid. You're talking about Tony Kukoc, him sitting out. I don't understand what we're missing. LZ says we're missing stuff. What are we missing?
Well, all right. Here's an example. All right. So Michael Jordan comes back. He's 45 and he's 23. And his legs are tired towards the end, and people feel that contributed to the reason why they lost against the Orlando Magic. And we spent a good deal of time talking about that, right? Like, I wouldn't
necessarily say it was a good amount of time, but okay.
You don't think there was a good 5 minutes spent on how tired he was? All the interviews with Tim Grover saying he had to change his body and all that stuff?
In a two-hour doc, I don't see that. But go ahead.
Let me cut you off real quick,
Travis.
Yeah.
There was no mention that James Worthy sprained his ankle after game one. That's my point. Those are the details I'm talking about.
We'll come back. We'll continue this. Plus, we're going to talk about Michael Jordan's career into minor league baseball. Was it a success or not? That's coming up on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.